Bali Deo Torah Marsha, Hey Menachem of Tavshin Pei Beis, Rav Shalom Springer.
Rabbi say it's 1,952 years since Churban Bayis Sheni. And we hoped that this year would be different. We hoped that this year would be a Yom Tov, when Tish B'Av comes, and maybe we've still got a few days where that could happen, but maybe it won't, and so we have to make the adequate preparations. So the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is not quite satisfied that we have done enough to merit a Geula. That in itself is something to cry about. So, Bochoy Sivche B'Laylo, we say in the Kinnis, the Avoida of Tisha B'Av is to cry. And the roots of that Bechia is, of course, what happened on that Tisha B'Av thousands of years ago, 3,300 years ago, that when the Meraglim returned, they cried. Everybody knows that story, and the Rabbeinu Shel Olam responds, Atem Bechisem Bechia Shel Chinom, you cried for no reason, and therefore I will fix this day of Tisha B'Av as being a Bechia L'Doiris. Let me just say that, of course, that is something to cry about, but it's not revenge. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam isn't taking revenge on us. It's a corrective process. The time will come when the crying through thousands of years will be sufficient to bring a geula. But the fact is that the avera, if you like, the deficiency of Klal Yisrael at the time of the Meraglim was that they cried when they had this promise of going to Eretz Yisrael, was that they didn't bring the Rabbeinu Shel Olam into their script at all. The spies came back with the information. They misinterpreted that information, and so they forgot about the existence of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam can bring them through any situation. And may I suggest that even at that period of Klal Yisrael, which is after the Ovis and after the Shibut Mitzrayim, we're still in a state and stage of Masa Ovis Simon Labonim, which means that anything we did then in shaping Klal Yisrael would get, so to speak, baked into our character in such a way that that would be part of the characteristic of Klal Yisrael. What were they meant to do? What they were meant to do at that point was, okay, the cities are strong, the people are strong, they've got tremendous military might, nuclear weapons, etc., but we don't have a problem. We don't have a problem because we have the Rabbeinu Shel Olam on our side. So there are no problems for us at all. The problem doesn't exist and it doesn't begin. That is what they were meant to do. And had they done that, then that characteristic would have been nishrash, would have been rooted in Klal Yisrael, so that any situation that we encounter, we can always respond with, we don't have a problem. We've got the Rabbeinu Shel Olam on our side. They didn't do that, unfortunately. And the reverse was the case, that we had within our personality as a nation, or as a character as a nation, that idea that, well, if things look bad, things are going to be bad. And that's why it's Bechia L'Doiris. It isn't revenge of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam making trouble for us in every generation. It's the fact that we have not expunged that mistake that we had at the time of the Meraglim. Time will come, hopefully, when we will have cried enough. Crying on Tisha B'Av is not just an individual thing. We cry together with others, Bochay Sivchay, and we bring in others. It's a tzibur activity, and when we cry, others cry with us. So if we look at root, the mistake of Klal Yisrael, if I may put it that way, the expressions we use about Klal Yisrael, Doideh, etc., but we've got to put it this way in order that we can learn the lessons that we're supposed to take from it. And there's a quote from the Chumash, "Basinas Hashem Aisonu Hoitzionu Mimitzrayim." And this is an incredible sentence, which says that because HaKadosh Baruch Hu hated us. That's why he took us out of Mitzrayim. In other words, when Klal Yisrael feel like that and react to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's actions on the basis that he hates us, and that's why he's done this to us, and to plonk us in the middle of a desert to die here, the sinas Hashem oisonu, because he hated us, which was the reaction of Klal Yisrael, what is it expression of? It's an expression of the fact that I feel separated from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I feel abandoned by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I feel a sense of hopelessness and despair. That is what it's an expression of. Despair, hopelessness. I don't think anything good can happen. He's taken us out and he's put us here. And that's, of course, the Bechir Shel Chinom. If we feel like that, then of course we cry. But the Rabbeinu Shlom is trying to emphasize to us that is Bechir Shel Chinom. I never let you go. I never ever abandon you. I never reject you insofar as that you should feel there's no one to help us at all. So when you feel detached from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you also feel detached from other Yidden. And therefore, if I feel detached about the other Yidden and about Klal Yisrael, and that means I'm only worrying about myself. I'm only worrying about my situation. And that is the feeling of despair that they had. HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates us and we are hopeless. It is hopeless that the detachment. Now I want to introduce you, maybe you're familiar with this, Rav Shimon Shkop, one of the famous Gedolim of yesteryear, Litvish Gedolim of yesteryear, wrote the Sefer Shara Yosha, in which there is a very insightful Hakadoma. And he explains in his Hakadoma that the idea is to become Kedoshim. The Torah commands us, Kedoshim Tiyu, Ki Kodosh Hashem Elekecha, because the Rabbeinu Shalom is Kodosh. Therefore, we should emulate him as best we can so that we should become Kodosh as well. So, what does it mean to become Kodosh? And that means, essentially, ideally, to do everything altruistically, what we call Lishma, to do everything not for ourselves, but for a higher purpose, to designate everything to the Klal universally. What I do is not just for myself, but I am part of a Klal, I'm part of eternity, the Klal is eternal, and part of the universe as a whole. And it starts with being and feeling part of Klal Yisrael. If I feel part of Klal Yisrael, then I feel very much part of Klal Yisrael, then whatever I do is not just for me, but it's for Klal Yisrael as well. And that means, if I can do that, then I'm on the route to Kedoshim Tiyu, that we become Kodosh by doing things which are not just for ourselves, but for a wider canvas. If we can be totally altruistic, totally selfless, then in that way I become like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu does nothing for himself. He does everything that he does for others or other things, other humans, etc., other human beings, that is. Does nothing for himself at all, doesn't need anything. So the more I become selfless, the more I integrate myself with a Klal and do things for the Klal, the more I emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Medrash says, Azoi, Kedoshim Tiyu, that's the Pasuk, Yochel Kamayni, Rashi brings this, Yochel Kamayni, you think you can be as Kodosh, as a Kodosh Baruch Hu, Tamad Loimer, Ki Kodosh Ani. Says the Rabbeinu Shloilom, I am Kodesh. What's the corollary of that? Kedushasi lemala mikedushaschem. That in all situations, my Kedusha, the Rabbeinu Shloilom's Kedusha, will always be above yours. You can never get to the point where you are equal in Kedusha to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. I can only be totally selfless, or as selfless as I can be, but I can never be exactly like a Kodesh Baruch Hu. A human being must be concerned about himself. It is essential that we are concerned about ourselves. You've got to love yourself. You've got to respect yourself. That is a very important part of being a human being. A person who has no self-respect, no love for himself, is a shattered person. A person must have respect for himself as well. Why? Because even though the goal of all existence is to be like a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and become attached to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to be part of him. Nevertheless, another aspect that is that we should earn it and we should own it. It should be ours, and we can only do that if somehow or other we have respect for ourselves and our goals. So the Gemara tells us in Bomitzia, Roitze Odom Bekav Shaloi, Mitisha Shel Chaveiroi. What does that mean? If we remember that Gemara, is that somebody grows something lovingly, he waters it, and makes sure that the ground is properly sustained, and there's a lot of nutrient, etc. He lovingly grows these plants and this corn, and he gets one cub out of it, and somebody offers him nine kubim. He says, no, my one cub is more valuable to me than the nine kubim I didn't earn or own. That's very important human characteristics, that we should earn and own what we have. And therefore yourself is important. You are important. Recognition of self. So the purpose of this world is feeling of self. Yet the whole purpose of everything is to be selfless and a contradiction. So Rav Shimon Shkok poses this as a question. On the one hand, we've just built up the fact that I should respect myself for those reasons that we've stated. And on the other hand, the purpose of the world is to be selfless. Surely I can't be selfless, self-aware, and at the same time, selfless. I can't be self-aware and selfless at the same time. Can I? So he says, yes, you can. You actually can have both of those attributes at the same time. How do we do this? He has a process, a system, and he expresses this in this particular way. For some people, it's very, very small. They're only concerned with themselves. Their whole universe is themselves. It's just me, and myself. That's all there is. It's for very small people. For some people are a little bit bigger than that. For some people, it's myself and my spouse. Myself and my wife, whatever, my spouse. So that's already, my universe has already expanded a little bit. For some people, it's more than that. Myself, my spouse, and my children. My family. My kahila. My town. In other words, myself can expand to such an extent that it's far from being just for myself, but for so many elements that I can include myself as part of, and therefore they become part of myself. Myself can be very, very big until I'm concerned not only for myself, but for the whole world. Relatives, neighborhoods, city, and eventually I'm part of this world. That is myself. So in other words, you can be selfless on the one hand, and look after yourself, because yourself is now so big that it includes the whole of the world, and therefore you can have those two aspects together. And Ani encompasses everybody else as well. So there's no conflict between self and selflessness. That's how I can achieve it. And of course what he's driving at is that we get and obtain Kedusha. As we say, particularly obvious, im ein anili, mili, if I'm only for myself, I'm only concerned. But on the other hand, if I'm not concerned about myself, who will be? HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be concerned about oneself. Kashini la'atzmi ma'ani. If I'm only for myself, ma'ani. So it's got to be a combination of both. All right, so we've got that far. It includes everybody. Personally concerned, simultaneously about himself and everybody else, and that is gutless. That is Kedusha. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Vayigdal Hayeled, he achieved maturity, Vayar B'Sifloisam. So immediately he sees the oppression of others, and he sees the situation of others, and he's therefore Noisa Ba'oil Chaveiroi, Noisa Ba'oil Klal Yisroel, and Noson Einov, the Liboy Leois Meitzah Alehem, and he immediately decided, this was his decision, to be Meitzah Alehem, to protect them and to be their protector. So how does a person consider himself to be part of everybody else? Intellectually, emotionally, feels the tzar and simcha of Klal Yisrael. I once heard this idea of the word ani. Ani is in the middle, you've got 50, and the Aleph at the beginning is me as an individual, and the Yud at the end of Ani represents Minyan, represents Klal Yisrael, and Sharei Torah, Chemishim, Sharei Tara, etc., in the middle of that, in the middle of my Ani. So that's Kedusha. Kedusha is when a person can attach themselves and be the source of Kedusha, to blend self-concern and selfless concern together. Therefore, the mitzvah of Ahavta L'Reicha Kamoicha is a blend of Reicha and Kamoicha. It's a mixture of those two. And it takes increased sensitivity in order to get the feelings of others, to understand the feelings of others. And if we lose that, we lose Kedusha. Now, we know, of course, that two Batei Mikdashos were destroyed. And in fact, we had warning of that right from the beginning, 4,000 years ago, when the Ribbono Shel Olam told Avram, "Vayomer Avram Yodoya Teda Ki Ger Yezarecha Be'eretz Lo Elohem," that you will be a ger, you'll be a stranger in a land that is not yours, theirs. "Va'avodum," and they will be enslaved. "Ve'inu oisom," and they will persecute them. That's a threefold slavery: Gerus, Avdus, and Inui. That was quite a harsh judgment. And the Medrash says that Yodoya Teda, of course, means, we all know, we learn as children, when everything is doubled over, it means emphasis. Shomoya Tishmu, Yoro Yoro, it means emphasis. But the Medrash, of course, takes it apart and does something else with it. Yodoya Teda is actually two types of knowledge. Yodaya Avram, that there's going to be a Golus, but Teda, there's going to be a Geula. And that's the idea, that Golus and Geula are going to work together. The Medrash actually expands further. Medrash Rabbah, this is on the Pasuk, tells us that there are a number of different types of Golus. In a nutshell, as we're going to get from Maral, Golus is when something or someone or a country is not in the right place. And the Medrash describes three types of Golus. Type one is that Klal Yisrael are going to be scattered among the nations. That Yodoya, you should know, Sha'ani Befazron, I'm going to scatter them among the nations. But Teda, this is the Geula bit, Sha'ani Mekabson, I'm going to gather them together. Second type of Golus, that Yodoya, you should know that I'm going to Memashkanon, I'm going to use them as a mashkan, just like a Malver takes a mashkan from the loiver, a thing, a gold watch, whatever it might be. So Klal Yisrael is going to be transported from Eretz Yisrael to somewhere else. We know this happened in Golus Bovel. They were transported en masse to Bovel. They were mashkan. But Yodoya Teda Shani Porkan, I will redeem my mashkan, I'll get you back. And the third type of Golus is Meshabdom, that I'm going to enslave you, and that is in Eretz Yisrael, where we had the land, but there were invaders, there were conquerors who forced us in all sorts of ways that we couldn't keep the Torah. And that was, of course, the Greek Golus. In the time of the Greeks were in control of Eretz Yisrael, so we couldn't do what we liked. And that's the third sort of Golus. And says the Medrash, but you should know, Ani Goyalom, the time will come when we will throw out the Greeks. And, of course, we have the Chanukah story. So those are the three types of Golus, and the Maral summarizes it, as I have already done. And he explains that Golus of anything is when it's not in its right place, or it's not in control of itself. We've had those three types of Golus, and each one is a different dimension of not being in the right place. Let me give you a moshel. You have a particular place for a sefer. You've got a sefer, and it's got a particular place in your shaffer. You only take it out when you want to use it. Okay, so this time you take it out and you're using it, and there's a ring at the door. And you go to the door with the sefer in your hand. You deal with whatever's happening at the door, and then you put the sefer down on the shelf near the door. And you don't put it back into the place in the shaffer where it belongs. That sefer is in Golus. That sefer is not in the place that it should be. It's in Golus, conceptually. So that is the Dugma of Golus. Now, it doesn't stop there, because supposing that this is a sefer where, actually, near the door is quite a good place for it. You decide one day, actually, I quite like it on the shelf near the door. From that moment onwards, that you decide that the shelf is the place for this sefer rather than in your shaffer, that sefer is no longer in Golus. It's now in a new existence, in its new existence on the shelf, not in its shaffer. Now, this is what the Maharal wants to say. Now, how does scholars work? The Torah has put together Yodoya Teda, which we darshan just a few moments ago, as being Golas, Yodoya, and Gula, Teda. But they are fused together in one unit, Golas and Gula. And so Maral says that Golas has always got to be a temporary state. When the Sefer is on the shelf, but I always intended to put it back in the Shafer, that Sefer is in Golas. For as long as it's there, if I intend to put it in the Shafer, it's in Golas. As soon as I'm happy that it's in a new place, it's no longer in Golas. But what happens, says the Maral, this is the mechanism, that since the Torah binds together, fuses together, Golas and Geula, I can't have one without the other. In order to get Geula, I've got to have Golas. And if I don't have Golas, if I decide that the Sefer on the shelf is perfectly all right, from that moment onwards, it's no longer Golas, and therefore I lose my chances of Geula. And that's what we're trying to do during these 3 weeks. What we're trying to do is to create Golas for ourselves. Especially in the situation that we have, a wonderful country, Malchus Shel Chesed and all the rest of it, not easy to feel that we are in Golas. Baruch Hashem, everyone's done well, hopefully, and therefore we feel extremely comfortable in our situation. But that's the danger. The danger is that if we feel comfortable, we no longer have the feeling of Golas anymore. And once we lose the feeling of being in Golas, then we lose our chances for Geula, which we're trying to achieve, which we're trying to get. And therefore, our Chachomim, in their brilliance, have given us a set of dinim, and with to enact these dinim over this period of 3 weeks, first the 3 weeks, and then the 9 days, and then Tisha B'Av, always making the restrictions a little bit more tough for us. What's the idea of this? The idea is this. Reb Chaim Volozhin explains that it is very difficult for a Yid to understand the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, because that is really what we're after. We want to feel the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, you can talk to people about the Holocaust or the old shtetl before the Holocaust. You can find people who know people that are old enough, etc., span a few hundred years by talking to a grandfather, that talked to a grandfather, and you can actually get back a few hundred years and get the stories. But you can't find anybody in this day and age that knows anything, or anyone who knows anyone about the Beis HaMikdash. It's so far removed that it's impossible to get any feeling for the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, because we never experienced the Beis HaMikdash. And Sir Reb Chaim Volozhin explains, what was that loss when a Yid wanted to be spiritually rejuvenated? He wanted an uplift. What did he do? He went to the Beis HaMikdash, or in a regel, and he saw the Nisim there, and he came back a new man, a new family. As he clip-clopped his way back to his farmstead, he felt very, very different, having watched the Nisim, seeing the Kohen Gadol in his splendor, as we say in Marei Kohen and Yom Kippur, etc. That was a whole process which Yid went through, and he benefited from the Beis HaMikdash. And when he lost the Beis HaMikdash at the Churban, they were devastated. There was not just a vacuum, but a complete emptiness. That's what he felt like at the Churban Bayis. We have very great difficulty in linking into this, because we have no real feeling for the existence of Beis HaMikdash, given that it's completely outside our experience and the experience of anybody who knows. Now, I'm going to give you a moshel that I don't know whether I've said it here once before, to try and explain what the Chachomim are trying to do with their mechanism of the 3 weeks and the halachas. The Chachomim, as you know, were fantastic psychologists. I mean, anything in psychology, in fact, I once heard from Rabbi Twersky that he says anything that the psychology books have got right is in Chazal. That's the great Rabbi Twersky, who was a psychiatrist himself. That's what he said. If it's right, if it's correct, it's in Chazal. And if it's not in Chazal, it's wrong. That's what he said. That's the reach of Chazal. And what I think they were trying to do is as follows. Try and put it in my own words over to you. When Yosef caught up with Yaakov, or Yaakov caught up with Yosef after 22 years, this was a meeting, this was a pekisha that could be like no other. It was an emotional event, which was, so to speak, an unrepeatable offer. And the psukim tell us how Vayipal al-Savoroi. And we're medayik, Rashi's medayik, that it seems to be a bit one-sided, that Yosef embraced Yaakov, whereas Yaakov did not embrace Yosef. And this is very strange. Surely Yaakov must have been terrifically affected by the fact that he hadn't seen his wonderful son for 22 years. And Rashi tells us in just two words that Yaakov was saying Kriya Shema. Now I heard this more from the Master of Shiva, who expanded on it on the following way. Zichron Lebrocha, Zichron Tzadik Lebrocha. Master of Shiva, the great Rebudal, explained it in the following way. That what was happening here was that Yaakov chose to say Kriya Shema at this point. Because the kasha is, all the Balei Hashkafa ask, did he have to say Kriya Shema just then? He's meeting up with his son, could he say it 5 minutes later? Just then he has to say it? And the answer is yes, Yaakov made a decision. I'm going to have an emotional event which I've never had before and I'm not going to have again. And I'm going to channel that emotional event into my Kriya Shema where there'll never be a Kriya Shema like it again. And that's what he did. In other words, we can funnel or channel or direct or guide our emotions in certain directions. If we've got an emotion, use it for a good purpose. That's what he was doing. And that, I suggest, gentlemen, Reisach, wherever else is on the end of the phone, that is what the Chachomim are trying to achieve with us. What they've asked us to do is to deprive ourselves of certain things that we usually have, whether it's music or shofar, etc., things that we have in general, and then later on, meat and wine, and on the, of course, on Tisha B'Av itself, complete cessation of any physical, etc. What are they trying to do? What's that got to do with the Beis HaMikdash? What they're trying to tell us is that when you feel this discomfort, the fact that you haven't put on fresh clothes today, or you haven't washed in the way that usually, you actually feel physical discomfort. So you can either say, well, I'm feeling uncomfortable, or you can say to yourself, this discomfort I want to donate to a feeling of the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. I want this discomfort to have a productive effect. And so what they've done is they've given us 3 weeks of avodah, of physical discomfort, in order that we can re-channel our thoughts and our feelings to the Beis HaMikdash that we've lost, that we're not feeling comfortable, and our discomfort is connected with the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. And with that, with our avodah, we can get to the place that we want to, which is that we want this kedusha that we were talking about before, by relating ourselves to the community and to the world, and feeling that the world saw us, also might saw us, can't take everything on our shoulders, but at least a feeling that way. And therefore, a little bit of the understanding of why we lost the Beis HaMikdash. Chazal tell us why. Chazal tell us that there are two sets of reasons of why we lost the first Beis HaMikdash, one set, and the second Beis HaMikdash. These are well known. Avodah Zarah, Shvichas Dom, and Gilui Aroyos. There are two Mahalchim. We've only got time for one. That Avodah Zarah is all about kovod. Part of it is kovod. We need to negate ourselves in relation to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's our duty. We should feel small in comparison with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the kovod that I take for myself must be part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. If it's just for myself, that's possible. Avodah Zarah is something that I make, the human being makes, in order that I can derive kovod for myself. That's what it is. It does my bidding. That's what Avodah Zarah is. So the Avodah Zarah is the negation of the kovod that is deserved and reserved for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which I may have, but it should be dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Avodah Zarah means that I'm dedicating it to myself. Shvichas Domin is a result of kinna, of jealousy, and I'll become destructive when I want something and I'm prepared to go all out to get it, which leads to Shvichas Domin, which is the end point of that. And it's the complete bitul of others. Others don't exist. If they're in my path, I trample them. And Gilui Aroyos is, of course, taiva. My own lusts are important. I'm only sensitive to what I need. Breaks the connection with the Kedusha, which we are striving for, to be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to have the world as part of, so to speak, our own oyster. And if we do that and do what the Chachamim have instructed us in an Erlich way, and add our thoughts that we can direct those deprivations that we are instructed to have in order to feel a loss of the Beis HaMikdash, and we really feel it, then maybe, although we started off this particular talk of counting the years that we haven't had a Beis HaMikdash, 1,952, maybe that this year will be the one where we do have a Beis HaMikdash, that we won't have to sit together and cry. And crying, of course, is the Avodas Hayom. There's a story that I heard about a Rav named Rabbi Goldberger, and he was a Rav in Denver, Colorado. What happened to him is some years after the Holocaust, a lady came to him and said that I cannot think of anything else. She was a Holocaust survivor. And she said to him that I can't think of anything else all day except my problems of the Holocaust. And this plagues me all the time, and I cry about it, and I just can't get over it in any sort of way whatsoever. I can't heal. So Rabbi Goldberger, I think he was a young man, he says, I can't really help you get over your problem. What I can do, I can cry with you. And he sat down, and she sat down, and they cried together. And they kept on doing this for a little while. And eventually, the lady got up and said, Rabbi Goldberger, thank you very much indeed. Now I know somebody empathizes with my feelings, I can begin my healing process. If all of Klal Yisrael cry together, we understand each other, we know what we're crying for, that is the Avodas Hayom, then we can begin the healing process towards a binyan bais shishi, b'mhira b'yomeinu.
Amen. Yeah.